And he said to me, I'm not going to take the flu vaccine. And he said, well, the Lord wants you to live longer so that you can preach the gospel. So he doesn't want you to die from influenza. He said, go and take it.
Hello and welcome to Faith at the Frontiers, a podcast that confronts challenges to the Christian faith with hope. This is the fifth episode in our series with Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science, or ECLAS, and in this episode we turn to the racial and political dimensions of science communication and how the black communities may have justifiable reasons for being suspicious of government-sponsored medicine. Pastor Alton Bell of Wembley Family Church in London explains how he overcame his own suspicions of the COVID-19 vaccine and then went on to persuade his church to take the vaccine as well. This is a challenging episode, but Pastor Bell maintains an upbeat and optimistic tone, even in the midst of these difficult truths about Western history. I hope you enjoy listening. So could you tell me a little bit about your involvement with ECLAS, Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science?
Well, from virtue of the fact that I'm a scientist by profession. I studied chemistry at undergraduate level, then worked in the industry for 15 years, latterly at the City University in London.
Oh, wow. So you weren't always a pastor, huh?
Not always.
No, wow. A chemist, first of all.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. And then after that, I worked in IT as an IT manager for 10 years or so.
Oh, wow. You've had three careers, or is there more complexity to this?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Then I went to study theology at London School of Theology and subsequently studied black theology at Queen's in Birmingham. And last year I did a master's in transformative practice at Queen's.
Oh, the Queen's Foundation. I know it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when just before the pandemic, when ECLAS was, they were running their program for scientists in the pew, I was contacted by, I think, Joe Aldridge and then Joel Edwards, who were associated with Durham, because Joe Aldridge knew that I was, well, he subsequently found out that I was a chemist initially. And so they asked myself and Joel Edwards to be part of the team to actually launch or bring the project into the black majority churches. So that's how I got involved with ECLAS. And from there, we just had meetings and so on with other folks and was invited to their seminars and programs and online programs.
I see.
Yeah. And then just after the pandemic became sort of all-encompassing and locking people down, I, with Robert Beckford, I just felt that I needed to do a podcast to gauge the reception of the vaccine or any vaccine that was actually going to be put out amongst the Black African and Caribbean community.
Can you tell me a little bit about why you felt the need to do that?
Really, because amongst the Christian community in particular and the Black community in general, there's a lot of skepticism when they are being ordered to do things by people in positions of authority and power.
Political authority.
Political authority, yes. Yeah. And particularly how the various governments and have treated our ancestors, when I say ancestors, people who came here in the 50s and 60s and so on. And also, one of the other reasons was because of the fact that there is what we call medical racism inbuilt in the systems that a lot of brown and black people work in or support.
I see, medical racism. Can you give me an example of that in operation?
Yes, of course. Well, people who attend hospital who are racialized as black, when they're telling their story of where it's hurting or where they have pain, they're less likely to be believed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, as a consequence, for example, people dying in childbirth, people of black and brown ethnic minority or global majority are four times more likely to die in childbirth than an indigenous white.
Wow, that's quite a big change. It's quite a big statistical difference.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So, and it doesn't end there. When I did a presentation with the local authority to try to mitigate against the non-uptake of the vaccine. And these are some of the reasons, because the polio vaccination was actually thrust on people and was experimented on people, on children in Africa. And you have various drugs were trialed on people. I don't know if you've heard of the Tuskegee experiment in the 1930s.
No.
Well, okay. I'll send you my presentation. Because in the 1930s in Tuskegee, in America, over 400 black men were injected with syphilis.
Wow.
To see how they actually coped with that disease. And many of them went on to impregnate their partners and give them the disease. And it wasn't until Bill Clinton was in power, I think in 1978, that he actually apologized for this. They were giving it unbeknownst to themselves. You know, it was an experiment that was carried out by the state on these 400 people of Tuskegee without their knowledge.
Yeah, so there's all of this history in the black community. It's a suspicion of political authority and of medical solutions proposed by that political authority, which somewhat explains, perhaps legitimately, and justifies some of their suspicion towards what the political authorities are saying is true, and which sort of reflects on the theme of this podcast series about science and religion. It just shows how science is always mediated through some kind of authority who's telling you what the science is. And if that authority has proven themselves untrustworthy in the past, then that gives you good reason to suspect whatever science they're telling you now.
And that, those are some of the reasons why we decided to take this temperature test amongst the community to see what their appetite was for taking this COVID-19 vaccination.
And what did you find?
Well, there were a lot of people who were very skeptical. Even given the actual scientific facts, people were still very skeptical. And there were several reasons why they were skeptical. One of them was the mistrust in authority and authority figures. Another one was because no one explained in depth what the contents of the vaccine were and how it came about so quickly.
So insufficient information.
Yeah. Insufficient information. And then thirdly, there's a lot of people were saying, you know, the rate that the vaccine was produced at was just too quick and no one knew anything about it. And so it was, and fourthly, there were conspiracy theorists who were going around saying that this was another methodology for the sinister people in the world to actually annihilate black people.
Oh, wow.
And people believed that. And so there was a low uptake amongst African and Caribbean people in particular. And a lot of the African and Caribbean people were Christian because of these reasons. So the purpose of the podcast was to present the scientific information from a black epidemiologist, and then present the biblical information, the biblical case for using doctors and medicines, and then allow people to have their say and make an informed choice.
I see. And I guess the hope was that because this podcast was being produced by members of the black community, that it would be a source of trust. And especially coming from a pastor like yourself, who's an authority, but not a political authority, do you think that they're more likely to trust the spiritual authorities?
Yes, they are. A lot of people are very trusting of pastors or religious leaders. They are more trusting of religious leaders than they are of civic leaders, for example.
Yeah.
And you know that, you know, what's happened subsequent to the pandemic has proved that the civic leaders, you know, You can't trust them as far as you can throw them, because they're like chameleons. They change to suit the political environment at the time.
It's very interesting how this shows how science is always bound up with politics, that there isn't any kind of pure scientific facts, that they're always mediated through politics. And because of that, we need to engage with the power structures that lie behind the scientific research and experiments.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, it's so true, because, I mean, one of the things that I did subsequently, so because of this podcast, I was invited to speak to on platforms like these Zoom platforms by the local authority, Brent Council, and then by Camden Council, and then by Institute of Psychologists and so on, just to share with people why people are hesitant. I also spoke with the then vaccine minister, who was Nadeem Zahawi, you know, because obviously they wanted... The irony of this, Barnabas, was that because the majority of people who were working as public-facing people, i.e. working on the buses as nurses and orderlies in hospitals who couldn't work remotely, they couldn't work from home, the majority of those people were people of color, were black and brown people. And so they were the ones who were...
In the greatest danger, as it were.
In the greatest danger, because they were the ones who were being exposed to the virus. They were on the front line, as it were.
And yet they were the ones also suspicious of taking the vaccine.
Correct. And so the idea was to get people to understand that this is how the vaccine works. This is why it's been produced so quickly, you know, and this is the result of taking the jab. And so it was a pyrrhic type of meeting, because people were given all different sorts of...
Yeah, I bet. So what sorts of things, was it effective, this podcast and some of these public appearances? Did you find that people were persuaded by your arguments?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, people in our church, you know, said, you know, they're going to get vaccinated because of the argument that I put forward. And it was very effective, but it didn't convince everyone.
Oh, you can never convince everyone.
Can't convince everyone. But it was very effective, because it wasn't just in our, I said, the African Caribbean community. It was also in other ethnic minority community, like the Somali community, and also amongst the Pakistanis, actually, who were predominantly Muslim. A lot of them were very hesitant. So I did collaboration with imams, other faith leaders, to actually talk about, you know, the vaccine and the scientific basis behind it.
So what kinds of arguments were the most effective in persuading people that it's okay to take the COVID vaccine?
Well, I think the most cogent argument really is once we explain how the vaccine works in terms of the messenger RNA and so on.
All right.
Because we had the epidemiologist, he is a lecturer at London University.
Yeah.
And also another guy from East London University, explaining that this thing does not change your DNA. And over time, if it does not impact or meet the virus, it will exit your body. So, see, the other thing as well that made it difficult was that there were a lot of people who had issues. Well, there's a small amount of people who had issues when they took a particular vaccine. And, you know, you remember the blood clot issue. That it was very rare, but one in a 10,000 or something like that, people would get a blood clot from taking
So it's not as if there's zero risk.
That's right. So there is always a risk. But what we were trying to point out was that the benefits far outweigh the risk.
Yeah, that there's a greater risk to not taking the vaccine, basically.
Yeah, because obviously one of the greatest risks was long COVID, which people didn't know what the impacts were of long COVID. And subsequently, they've come to learn that the impact of long COVID has been quite devastating. It becomes quite degenerative in terms of, you know, affecting many, many members of your body.
Very interesting. Why do you think you yourself were initially sort of convinced by and happy with the COVID vaccine, to the point where you wanted to promote the use of the COVID vaccine?
I wasn't.
You weren't? Oh, that's okay. Tell me about it. Talk me through your own process.
Well, the thing is, I mean, as I said, one of the reasons for doing the podcast as well, the topic was, does God want me to take...
Does God want me to take the COVID vaccine? Yeah.
So there is a theological case for vaccination because it saves lives. There is a case for taking the flu vaccine if you're in a vulnerable, in one of those vulnerable categories. And so what was reported and what we know is that a vaccine takes between 5 to 10 years to develop. However, the COVID vaccine was developed in 10 months.
Yes.
So, you know, I certainly wasn't convinced. However, I did my research because there was a lot of conspiracy theories going around. One of them, which a lot of people were buying into, was that the COVID virus was man-made and it was a result of people rolling out 5G. And that had taken hold in our community.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so to disprove those, I had to then, you know, go and do some research and look at how the various frequencies, how they operate, you know, what frequency level 5G operates at.
And what effect that has on the human body, yeah.
That's right, and how the radiation affects the oxygen within the hemoglobin and so on. And so I wanted to know how and why the vaccination for the virus was able to be produced in such a short period of time. And so the epidemiologists who actually worked for the MHRA explained that because this was an emergency, you know, and usually a vaccine is copyrighted, people actually put copyrights to one side.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the stages of vaccination, i.e. stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, from testing to approval, were done in parallel. And so you were doing testing in different countries on a large cohort whilst you were still refining the development.
I see. So they sped up the process. Instead of doing these things one after the other, they did them all simultaneously.
That's right. Yeah. Instead of doing it in serial, do this and then wait for funding and then do that. The government released funding, so the money wasn't an issue. And so the people in Oxford who were working on the Oxford AstraZeneca, they were able to modify their virus because they're different. The AstraZeneca vaccine is slightly different from the Pfizer-BioNTech.
Yes.
Right. The Oxford AstraZeneca uses, like the flu virus, a live strain and modifies that so that it attacks the virus, whereas the Pfizer-BioNTech one uses the messenger RNA.
Yeah, that's the radically new one that they haven't done a vaccine of that kind before. That's right, yeah.
And because it was radical and new, people again were very suspicious. So we need to wait a few years until if there's any side effects from this thing, because we don't want to see people growing arms and legs or whatever.
Turning green, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Convinced of this, I then got from the manufacturers the actual ingredients of what was in the vaccine itself. And obviously being a chemist, I understood what it was and how they work, and consequently decided to recommend that people do take it.
Very interesting.
Yeah. But it all stems from the fact that the historical antecedents, the historicity and the medical neglect and the medical abuse of by people in authority on people who are not even aware some of the times is still very much in the psyche of people.
There's still a lot of historically rooted suspicion. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, what? I mean, one of the most current one is what the Nazis did to the Jews in the Second World War.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you said you made a biblical case for taking the vaccine. What was the biblical side of the case?
Well, the biblical side was that obviously we believe that God is the creator of everyone, and so he wants people to be well. And so in the letters that John writes is that I want you to prosper as your soul prosper. And so you know, our argument, our theological argument is that if your soul is going to prosper, you need your body to be whole. And so the actual perspective that God comes to with all of us is that when an individual came to Jesus and they had an issue, you know, the issue was dealt with not just in the physical, but also in the spiritual. So when Jesus said, "Making you whole, you know, I'm not just healing your hand and that was crippled, for example, but I want you to stop doing what you were doing, which is against God." You know, so
it shows that Jesus cares about both body and spirit, because Jesus ministered to both body and spirit.
Correct. Yeah. And so because Jesus ministered to body and spirit, he wants us to minister to body and spirit as well. And
yeah.
So from a theological perspective, you know, the Lord wants each and every individual to be whole. And you can only be whole when you have a sound body and also a sound mind.
Yes, you could say, because your body is part of who you are just as much as your soul is. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've got to look after, you know, Paul says, you know, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And some people use that to say, right, because my body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, I'm not going to put anything that's unholy in it, which they saw the vaccine of being unholy.
Oh, I see. So that verse has been used for the opposite argument. Yeah.
Absolutely. But we're saying, you know, if your body is the temple, then you've got to maintain that temple. You've got to actually ensure that it functions correctly so that you can worship God, not just by raising your hand and singing, but worshiping God by doing what he's called you to do. And, you know, for example, when I was studying theology at London School of Theology, one of the guys there, I think he was a porter, but he was obviously a preacher in his church as well. And he said to me, you know, I'm not going to take the flu vaccine. And he said, well, the Lord wants you to live longer so that you can preach the gospel. So he doesn't want you to die from influenza. I said, go and take it. I had to think about it. I said, yeah, you're right. You know, has provided us with doctors and scientists, and being a scientist, it's easy to see that. The Lord has provided us with these folks who have the necessary knowledge and the wisdom to be able to fix the various ills within your body. So from a theological perspective, we argue that God is about hospitality, one of the major things. And if you're going to be hospitable, then, you know, you actually have to be whole yourself so that you can actually help those who are less fortunate.
Absolutely. And your argument is that the doctors and nurses are the way that God actually ministers to our bodies. Like, you know, it reminds me of that joke where there's the man who's drowning and asks God to save him, and an airplane goes by and offers to pick him up, and he says, no, I'm waiting for God. And then he dies and goes to heaven and says, God, why didn't you save me? And God says, well, I sent you an airplane. Like, what more did you want? So, like, yeah. I guess the point is God can work through doctors and nurses, and we need to avail ourselves of that help. Yeah.
So that's, you know, and I had a couple of theologians. One of them was Professor Robert Beckford, and then a pastor on the ground to put the biblical cases, you know, to the folks within the actual all that.
That's a really, really interesting story. Thank you for sharing it. It's very interesting to hear some of the differences that the Black community and the Black Christian community, the different experiences that they've had in terms of the relationship between science and religion, and how the political dimension and the historical wounds that they had can quickly come in and make understandable reasons for being suspicious.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And it's we can never actually belittle that, because, you know, people's stories are, you know, you've got to listen to folks and listen to their story to see what's going on, to see where they're coming from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's one of the things that that our Lord did. He listened to people, and then he would actually go and heal their diseases. I think it's in Luke 9, verse 11, which is the strap line for LL Ministries. It says, Jesus welcomed the folks. He listened to their concerns, and he healed all their diseases. And so part of the healing process for us could be whatever medical intervention it can be.
Yeah, yeah, but it has to start with listening and understanding where people are coming from and meeting them where they are instead of demanding that they start from somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Pastor Alton, for giving us your time and for sharing your experiences with us.
And thank you so much for your patience and for coming back.
No worries at all. I knew that you had some very worthwhile things to talk about, and so I really wanted to hear them. Thank you for listening to Faith at the Frontiers, a podcast produced in collaboration with The Tablet. If you liked this episode, then do subscribe to hear more like it in the future. For now, goodbye.